Blog Talk Radio.
PGA Tour season. Count them up. We start with Emiliano Grillo from Argentina. We'll probably represent them in the Olympics. Interesting cause and effect to his win at the Friars.com Open in the playoff. That was followed by Mr. Smiley Kaufman, who went low with 61 in Vegas. And hit the right number, sat around for a while. Nobody came, people came close. Nobody was able to tie. And he successfully won his first PGA Tour event. He'll be driving down Magnolia Lane. We followed that up with Justin Thomas in Malaysia, who was Jim Nantzel, Rich Eisen. You could see that one coming. Here's a guy who's got a lot of talent, a lot of things about to come the way of Justin Thomas. And Jim Nance told Rich Eisen there's probably five guys who he thinks can make a legitimate run at there's a list of five guys who probably follow up the big three. Ricky's on that. Dustin's on that, and he put Justin Thomas in that list, too. Let me see here. Jim Nance said Justin Thomas will be a great one, and said kind of the next five guys you'd expect to join his BFF Jordan. So when Jim Nance says it, and Jimmy was there obviously at the Greenbrier when Justin blew it down the stretch with that four putt on 10 at the Greenbrier. He saw the talent. It is very clear what can be coming the way of Justin Thomas. He didn't play as well in the HSBC, obviously, but clearly that is somebody who has a very bright future ahead of him. That was followed up by Russell Knox winning the HSBC Champions. Here's a guy who ended up in the 4R play at the 4R playoff, the 2014 Honda Classic that was eventually won by Russell Henley. He was in there with, I believe it was Ryan Palmer, Rory, and Russell Henley. And Russell Henley won that playoff. That was when Rory shot, what was it, 60? No, Tiger shot 62 at Honda. Whatever Rory shot on Sunday, hit that insane three-wood, I think it was, to 18. When he needed it most after just laying the sod over one on 17 and hanging in the water in the middle, or 16 in the middle of the bear trap. Knox gets his first win, and on a day when Dustin Johnson got bit by the flagstick bug the same way, Tiger got bit. I'm having trouble speaking tonight. Bit by the flagstick bug at Augusta in 2013 on 15. Dustin hits it in the water on 8 when it hits off the flagstick. Bad break. Makes double. Was never quite able to recover, and Russell Knox pulled away from Kevin Kisner and got his first PGA Tour win. And then today, in the rain-delayed Sanderson Farms Championship, the parallel event, opposite field event, however you want to look at it, Peter Malnati, who wanted to improve on his first PGA Tour trip, went back to the Web.com Tour, made it off the Web.com Tour, and put together a mighty fine performance today, finishing strong en route to holding off everybody else. What Malnati did today, which is really impressive. When you're playing simultaneous golf, it's tough to keep track of where you are. You're playing a lot of holes. I forget how many he had to play today, but it had to be somewhere around 20, 25, 26 holes. He made three birdies in the back nine and made four birdies in the front. He did have two birdies in the middle, but he bounced back with two birdies on 7 and 9 to make sure that he turned in 34. That's impressive playing in a big spot, and good for Peter Malnati to notch his first PGA Tour win. We will be joined by Kyle Brennan, who's gotten many a PGA Tour victory in his career. Momentarily, we'll be back in 30 seconds. Bob Costas takes us to break. This is Teeing Up with Jeremy Schoen.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
We have a great show for you tonight. It features Kyle Brennan, the all-American Chevrolet driver, Republican American sports writer, newspaper sports writer. Got to get that title clear. And proud Quinnipiac Bobcat, and he joins us now. Welcome back, Mr. Brennan.
Been too long, Jared. Good to be back.
Now, as you know, you are on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schoen, and you folks out there are listening to Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schoen, which is on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, golfnewsnet.com. I should know this before I shout it out. Hold on. thegolfnewsnet.com. There you go. And iTunes. How do you feel? You and Taylor Swift and all your other favorite musical acts have something in common.
I'm in iTunes in a number of different ways, including my Sunday morning Connecticut High School football radio program. So I'm no stranger to this atmosphere, and it's always a thrill to be back in the I community, although Apple can go to hell as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, what's your beef with Steve Jobs and Tim Cook and company?
No. Steve Jobs is a fine dude. I just have no use for most of their products. iPod's a good deal, but don't like their computers, don't like their phones. But, hey, you know what? God bless them for gouging Americans who will gullibly pay for their products.
What's wrong with the iPhone?
The interface does not do it for me. I like PCs and I like Droids because you're able, at least in my experience, and I think my experience is pretty good, I'm able to do a whole lot more customizations than go in there and change little settings that I want to change, because I consider myself more of an advanced user of these sorts of pieces of hardware. And I always feel that a lot of folks who are using the items, even though they have good use, particularly in the multimedia world, I always feel that they're a little bit there's things that you just can't do otherwise.
Talking to Kyle Brennan here. That is a very legitimate beef, and you have stayed away from my phones. I can tell because my texts to you are green and not blue. So that is very legitimate. Let's start off here. Our Quinnipiac Bobcats. Can we call them our? Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a big problem with people who call their sports teams we and our. However, I do have a couple exceptions. One of them is if you're on the payroll for an organization, Number two is if it's your alma mater. And number three, it's if you are related to somebody on a team. And since we fall into category number two, we are allowed to call them we and our.
They are number two, number four right now. See, you got me stuck on saying two. Number four right now in the nation, 8-0-0 with a huge comeback victory against Cornell. You follow this team a tad closer than I do. What was expected out of this team when the season started?
Well, I think everybody, at least around here, thought they were going to be pretty good again. You got to keep in mind that this is a team now that's made three straight NCAA tournaments, and only the very basically the top of college hockey royalty can claim that sort of feat as well, and you know, well on their way to a fourth straight now. Last year was sort of an interesting year because you had the two classes, the one that got them to the NCAA final and then made it back to the tournament a second year. Those are sort of veteran-type classes. Last year they were dealing with a lot more youth, as Rand Technell, the coach, liked to say, you know, we have 18 freshmen and sophomores on this team, and he said that an awful lot last year. You know, maybe partly as an excuse, but partly as a reality to where these guys had to get up to speed because just the way in Rand's program it works, that every fourth year there happens to be a big recruiting class, a hole, if you will, that they were kind of trying to fill last year to some degree. They this year, a lot of guys, a lot more returning players. They have a very good freshman class and made an impact right away, but it boils down to, you've got a goalie in Michael Gardig who was good the last couple of years but couldn't quite figure it out at times. He's figured it out playing very well early in this season. And Quinnipiac is scoring goals at a clip that they have not scored at in quite a while. I mean, back as some might say, your father's Bobcats, back when your classes were back in school, Quinnipiac wouldn't really have trouble scoring a whole lot of goals. They'd put up 4 or 5 goals regularly, but they'd also give up 4, 5, 6 goals regularly. Well, now they're averaging almost 5 goals a game this year, and they're allowing, you know, less than 2 goals a game. So really solid on both sides, a lot of different guys. They have 4 full lines going right now. Definitely some spots to be improved with, but they have earned 8-0-0. There's three number one votes for them in the USCHO.com poll. If I were voting, I'd have a hard time not putting them at number one, but I do understand the three other teams above them with Providence, BC, and North Dakota. I could all understand all of them. I think it's a pretty deep year shaping up here in college hockey with some excellent teams. They're going to host Harvard on Friday. Harvard is considered by many to be maybe the best team in the ECAC. So between Quinnipiac, Harvard, and Yale this year, it's going to be awfully fun in this league, which some you could argue has been the best in college hockey for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, with Yale and Union winning championships. Quinnipiac was there a couple of years ago. This is a league as good as it gets right now.
And the HU Yale rematch that'll happen later in the season will be at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, at 7:30 on Saturday, January 9th, as part of the doubleheader. There's an official name for that I can't think of.
They're playing Harvard in that game. I don't think they're playing Yale in that one. The Yale games are just home and away. I think that's the Harvard game. I know there's a whole bunch of our Bobcats that are our old alumni that are going to be heading down for that game, and that could be excellent. You know, like I said, Quinnipiac and Harvard might be both top 10, top 5 in the country by that point. So MSG is going to get its money worth out of that day.
First of all, I meant to say Harvard. That's my fault if I did not say Harvard. And second of all, it is called the Rivalry on Ice. That is the official name of it. And that night also includes an exhibition between Army and Navy. But you are totally correct. Harvard right now is sitting there at number 7 in the nation. They are, 3-0-1. How have they played only 4 games?
The Ivy League, the 6 Ivy League schools start their season later than the other 54 Division I schools. I don't exactly know why. It's probably one of those Ivy League things, but they're just weird. They all end up playing fewer games than everybody else in the country. I think when Yale won the national championship, I'm not even sure if they won 20 games that year. They might have just won 20 games just because if they play, you know, they start sooner, they play about six or seven fewer regular season games. And then Yale lost a bunch of games that year. Yale really shouldn't even have been in the NCAA tournament the year that they won the championship, but that's neither here nor there at this point. So, you know, you're talking all the six Ivies, they start 3 or 4 weeks later. Quinnipiac's first games this year were, I think, the first weekend of October, as were many college hockey teams. So they get a bit of a leg up. So they'll be a little bit more seasoned this year with Harvard. But Harvard's got an NHL-ready forward in Jimmy Vesey, who is going to, you know, he's going to be in the Hobey Baker running this year as he was last year. And he'll be a handful. That ought to be a great game on Friday, which will be, as usual, streaming on Quinnipiac's athletics website, which they've got it right. The Ivy League still wants to charge you $10 to watch a hockey game, as do many of the ECAC schools and some others around the country. I don't get it. I think the exposure that you get, you know, just sticking your games on your website streaming-wise, you know, sell a little advertising if you want, but I think it's absurd that schools are still trying to charge $10 to watch a hockey feed online.
Money talks, son.
Yeah, some folks pay. You know, if you want to gouge the kids' parents out on paying for these games, that's fine. I know our good friend Corey Hirsch has ponied up a couple times to pay for it, but I just think it's silly. But that's just me.
Money talks in the world. We're going to do a 180, and there's no better way to make the transition other than to announce that we're about to do a 180. You cover high school sports. You've covered it for years. You've covered it intently, intensely, both of those words. You've done it via your voice, via your writing, via your presence. And I preface this question by saying that, which is you have, of all the people I know, probably the best pulse on where high school sports is going in terms of concussions. Now, Connecticut is not Texas. It's not Friday Night Lights. But the whole high school football mindset is very prevalent in most of the country. We have had, I think it's now up to 4 football players in high school die from game injuries this year in the 50 states of the U.S. It's been horrible. It's been tragic. It's been a bad year when it comes to football injuries. And the last time I had you on the show, I asked about participation numbers, parent mindset, etc. Have you seen any impact from all these injuries, which have garnered national attention? This is not just, you know, local stuff. This is national news. For these deaths via in-game injuries, have you seen that impact anything that you see on a weekly Friday and Saturday basis?
I have not. Actually, the number is higher than that now. There was another couple within the last couple of weeks. Last number I saw was 10. Now, that's not saying all of them were head injuries. Some of them, there was a couple of them. I know the one that was in New Jersey about a month ago. That kid had an enlarged spleen that they didn't know about, and that was what caused his. But, you know, there's been a couple different reasons for all these. I don't think these are immediate impacts, but I think the parallel is worth looking at. I don't think a lot of people know that the reason that the NCAA exists in the first place is because there were like 20 deaths in college football back in the early 1900s. I think it was like 1906 that Teddy Roosevelt, the president then, said, hey, someone needs to get together and regulate this or else we're banning college football. So the NCAA formed as a result to sort of regulate that thing. There are regulatory boards in a lot of different fashions for high school sports. You've got the National Federation of High Schools, and then each state, for the most part, has its own association or associations. So we have the CIAC here in Connecticut. They have concussion protocols, not only for treatment and whatnot, but they're, to my knowledge, they're pretty much ahead of the curve when it comes to the rest of the states. Almost some coaches here think a little bit too much, though, where all the coaches have to renew their concussion, I guess for lack of a better term, knowledge certifications. They have to go through retesting and recertification every year or two. Now, new this year, where if a player on a team sustains a concussion, That has to be tracked in this database that gets uploaded to the state, and they're going to be using that for some sort of studies or whatnot. So there's different impacts of it. Anything immediate from the unfortunate incidents we've had so far this year. But I think the concussion issue is pretty much, you know, you hear raise awareness of this, raise awareness of that. I think the awareness is completely there. Now it's a matter of, you know, what can you do about it? I know there's some schools in our state that use there's a concussion soft shell helmet, if you will. It's like a slip cover over the hard shells. Some teams are using that even in games. A lot of them use it in practices, but some teams are even using those during games now. So, you know, you'll see more. The participation numbers, at least here, are not very good. You know, you're talking about pretty big schools with only about 45 some odd kids dressing up for varsity. High school football in this neck of the woods is not exactly in good health. That's not saying in many other parts of the country it's not in good health, because I think it is. But things are different, and they're not going to turn around at any point soon, in my estimation.
Two things, because the point that you brought up at the end there is so crucial. We've seen, and I've read stories about teams having problems fielding players, having complete teams postponing games, having to move players that aren't ready up from JV to varsity. Have you, shown up at a game and been handed a roster and basically not have any idea who this person was or why they're playing, but maybe something happened, maybe the participation number wasn't there? And this probably would be a better question for September versus November. But, you know, basically, in the years you've been covering it, have you seen not only quality decline, but the ability to field the proper number of players to have an effective football team go down?
Well, the quality has definitely declined, even within the last 3 years, I'd say. For some reason, it seems like it's declined just that quickly. It was pretty decent up until, I think, 2013. You still get some pockets of pretty good stuff around here, but overall, the quality's definitely declined. And it's tough to say about the numbers, because I'll talk to some of the older time folks who have been watching football around here for decades, and they say, hey, this school just – they never really had a big roster. Well, okay, but, it's just things seem – like the numbers are lower mostly across the board. I know I've heard stories of some coaches, saying, hey, our program used to have 70, 80 kids in it. Now we're down to 40 and 50. So I think there's multiple reasons for that sort of stuff. You're talking about, if there's a basketball player, he may only just play basketball year round for the whole scholarship perspective of it. I think if LeBron James is coming up today, I'm not sure if he's going to be playing high school football at this point in time. It was only 12, 13 years ago. But I would find it hard to believe that he'd be playing high school football right now if he were the same type of NBA prospect that he was. So you get that part of it. A lot of guys just want to play one sport or so. You've got more sports offered now. High school boys soccer is bigger now than it was 30 years ago, even 15 years ago. So between those sorts of offerings and the tendency for guys to specialize, I think you've got that. And then plus just the overall stigma that football's got, which we've mentioned, not exactly the safest, but then again, the stats on high school concussions, I think usually cite girls soccer as the highest concussion rate of any sport. So I think football gets a little bit too much of a bad rep, but there are definite reasons for it. Now teams are a lot of time forced to play their players on both sides of the football, which invariably lowers the quality of play. It's not to say it never happened before, but I think you see a larger volume of that, and it widens the separation between the best teams and the average teams in our state. The teams that can afford to play 11 guys on offense and only use one or two of them also on defense, you can see the number one ranked team in our state right now is the largest high school or second largest high school in the state. And I think they play one or two guys both ways. So
talking to Kyle Brennan here about some good and some bad, especially when it comes to the impact of head injuries on football. And byproduct of that is lacrosse has gone up and golf, my boys. We won't know this until 15, 20 years from now, but concussions may drive. You know, it's not just Tiger, it's not just the first tee. This next wave of golfer may come from parents looking for alternative places to put their kids. We will see how far that goes. You love your country music, and specifically you love what you believe is high-quality country music and not trash country music. Chris Stapleton had a big week at the CMAs. In the lead to Ben Cesaro's, or actually the tweet by Ben Cesaro from the great New York Times, Chris Stapleton goes from oblivion to number one. Taylor Swift lands outside the top 10 after 52 weeks straight. Chris Stapleton plays with Justin Timberlake, sweeps all the big awards at the CMAs, and now is a star. Where did he come from, Kyle?
Well, I think it's fair to say that for most of the country music fan world out there, they had no idea who Chris Stapleton is. That's not a surprise. I did. I've listened to his stuff before. His album's good. The Traveler album, which won Album of the Year and helped him win both New and Male Artist of the Year. It's a very good album. I did not think it was the best of the year. What I think that partially this is driven by a sort of there is a little bit of pushback among the whatever the voting community is. I'm not still totally clear on what the voting community is. I think it's a combination of artists and record labels and promoters and all that sort of stuff, musicians. I think there is some pushback coming from that way, where you had this bro country trend, for lack of a better term, that mostly dominated the country music scene for the last 5 years. I think, you know, you talk guys like Florida Georgia Line, Luke Bryan, Jason Aldean, and Blake Shelton, some newer guys like Chase Rice and Sam Hunt and all these types that see opportunity. I think this is the biggest thing. They see opportunity to make some easy money off, you know, the girls out there and the party type of guys. They want to do a more of a pop crossover, which you almost can't blame them for seeing more easy money to make. But so there's been this kickback, and it's grown over the last couple of years, particularly over the last year, I think, this backlash against that bro country. And I think that the community was sort of looking to find this champion to get behind, say, hey, look, we're moving on from this. And Chris Stapleton happened to be the guy. I personally think that Dierks Bentley's Riser album and his performance over the last year should have earned him two of those awards. And the other part of this argument is the effect on country radio. And to me, it's going to have no effect on country radio, because country radio, the radio business is sort of monopolized to some degree, where many of the stations are now no longer independent. They're owned by some of the national corporations. For example, ours here in Connecticut is Country 92.5. They are an iHeart Media station. And iHeart Radio kind of dictates what they can do and what they can't do for the most part. iHeart Radio is in bed, again, for lack of a better term, with some of those big record labels. And if the labels say, hey, you need to get behind Sam Hunt and play this song and get it to the top of this chart, you know, your hands are kind of tied. I don't see that sort of motion going to happen behind a Chris Stapleton, who is more of a Texas country type of guy, more of the old school outlaw country sort of guy. Got some bluegrassy tones, got some folksy tones to it. I don't think that is going to catch on with the top 40 genre of country radio station. So while I'm glad he's getting his limelight and this issue is getting its little spotlight for now, I'm not sure that this translates necessarily for him in stardom per se or radio play. It remains to be seen. It's a nice little hiccup, but I'm unconvinced that the issue is put to bed.
I have 60 seconds. I actually have less than 60 seconds. Has The Voice and Blake Shelton 10 seconds. So basically, in 5 seconds, has The Voice and Blake Shelton hurt country music?
It hasn't hurt it. It's brought a newer fan base that not sure is what country music really needed or wanted, but exposure doesn't hurt.
Is that the bro fan base?
That's the bro fan base that you're part of it. He's not the biggest violator, but he certainly hasn't helped push things back.
It's interesting because my question, and we're now in bonus time, which I think gets uploaded into the version on iTunes, but I'm not sure, is always, or was going to be, is Blake's romance with Gwen Stefani significant for the country community? You know, is that the stuff that gets people going, oh my God, and has social country music sites light up? Or does it push people more and more and more towards the bro stuff, which you just want people to be done with?
Listen, I don't think any sort of connection between he and Gwen Stefani has any impact whatsoever in the music that I'm going to listen to. Now, I appreciate when an artist says, you know, we want to broaden our horizons and try something new. God bless you. I respect Taylor Swift for saying, look, I'm no longer going to veil my music as country in the country genre. I'm going to go out and make pop music. And God bless her. Correct decision. She makes good music for the pop world. And I wish more of the quote-unquote country artists would do that. I mean, a lot of what Luke Bryan put out the last few years has been thinly veiled as country music. You know, same with Blake Shelton, same with Sam Hunt. Sam Hunt's the worst violator of that to me, and Florida Georgia Line, both of them. So, you know, whatever they want to do, good. It's just a matter of stop veiling your money and stealing it from people who are claiming to be under this country music umbrella when it just isn't, you know. Genres, they might be dead to some degree, but, you know, stop trying to pass your stuff off as something it isn't. You know, it's majority of it is checklist songwriting. Put your truck in there, put your alcohol, put your girl, put your dirt road, put your riverbank, put your whatever it is. And you'll find a whole lot of songs, and they all sound both lyrically and sonically awfully similar. And it's getting away from that a little bit right now, but there's still a whole lot of that holding on.
I love that. Checklist songwriting.
Yeah, no, it's a real thing. Real thing.
That's great. Kyle Brennan. sorry, I had never heard that phrase before. It's fantastic, and it applies to a lot of genres, not just country music. Kyle from the Republican American newsletter, newspaper, and a proud Chevrolet driver. Thank you, sir.
Jeremy, always a pleasure. Do it again soon.
See you Sunday for the sprint. Have a great night, everybody.